This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Stuart McFarlane is one of Australia's most prolific contemporary narrative painters. With his works and collections at, among others, Art Gallery of Western Australia, the Australian National Gallery, the Anderson Museum of Contemporary Art in New Mexico, and the Provincetown Museum and Art Centre in Massachusetts. He's currently showing his fifth solo at Wailing Contemporary, and it's called The Untold, which is on until the 16th of October. Stuart is here with me today. Thank you for joining me, Stuart.
Hi, Sharmila. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing very well.
So you have come down to KL for the show from New Mexico, I believe.
Actually, I've flown across from Australia.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a gypsy, yeah. And... I'm still trying to find a place where I'll settle long term. So sometimes I might be said to have lived in Melbourne. Sometimes it might be Hobart. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's America. But I move a lot.
So at the moment, where you put your bag is New Mexico?
Yes, my wife Robin and I are heading back to New Mexico.
But you are Australian. You were born in Australia, and
yes.
That kind of informs a lot of your early experiences.
It certainly does. I'm half and half. I feel half my spirit is in America and half's in Australia.
And that is kind of what is captured in this particular series of paintings, isn't it? The Untold.
Yeah.
That experience of being between continents, between countries.
It does reflect both of those. And I'm not sure, where it meets and what the similarities are. Obviously, my style, which I've had for a long time, and just my love of painting. I just absolutely love the act of painting,
mm-hmm.
And wherever I am, reflects that is reflected in what I produce.
And you're described as a narrative painter.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean to you? Capturing narratives on canvas.
One of the things about traveling so much is your surroundings are fresh, are often fresh. So even riding around KL, and I just I'd rather catch a taxi than be in the subway or the train because, just looking out the window and seeing the people, I just love looking at the way people live and the structures they build. And to capture that in paint and then to simplify it is thrilling to me. I love, capturing stories.
And your style of capturing these stories, your paintings, they've been, from the ones that I've seen from the beginning till now, you're a figurative painter.
Yes.
And although there are lots of very expressionistic touches, some of them even sort of veer slightly into pop art, especially when it comes to the colors and the backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
What has kept you interested in doing figurative painting for so many years?
Because I feel like I've never really captured it as well, or there's no final point. I'm always trying to get the ultimate image and story and color and have it all combined. So yeah, it's a lifelong thing. As long as I can, I'll keep doing it.
Is that what you started off, even when you were a young painter?
Yeah, when I was my first paintings, I think one of the first paintings I did was of a demonstration. I first started painting in 1968, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't quite counted up the decades of that. But as a 13-year-old or whatever, at that point, I was painting some demonstration in a city where people were turning a car over and stuff, the story started from there.
That's quite a significant thing for a 13-year-old to decide to paint, isn't it?
it was like I like the drama. I like stories and drama and, mm-hmm. and crazy things that people do.
And what exactly does The Untold set out to tell?
I can't say. It's untold.
It's quite a counterintuitive question, I know.
I never really set out to tell anything. I mean, I like these stories to ooze out of the paintings by themselves. That's part of why it's called The Untold, because the stories are told by the paintings, not by me so much, and by the people who see them. And they mean different things to different people. And I don't start off with a script for any of the paintings, really. they start off usually with a visual of where I am, you know, a background, and then I'll find a character who fits that visual. So in one particular painting, which is called The Untold, which is the biggest painting in the show, I went to Monument Valley, which is on the border of Utah and New Mexico and Arizona, and it's in Navajo country, Native American country. And it's beautiful. It's where all those huge landforms are just jutting out of the earth, or the earth has been carved away from them. And it's the background for many Western movies, John Wayne movies. And I've never been there before this year, and it was immediately, you know, like something I had to paint. And then I needed the foreground for it. And so the big painting has a young girl and a horse, a black horse, in it. Originally, I kind of saw like a character riding a horse, you know, through this, you know, like as they would have in the movies. But I wanted a foreground figure, so I actually found a girl who owned a horse in the town where my studio was, which was Roswell, New Mexico. And the girl had this black horse, and the horse was related to a famous racehorse in America called Secretariat. But the owners of that horse had left the horse. Not the current owners, but the owners before, had left the horse to starve in a paddock, and it was, you know, it was very sad. So the horse was found by this girl's parents and rescued, and the girl herself was also rescued. She was left on the doorstep of a police station. Her mother was into drugs, heavily into drugs, and couldn't look after the girl, and so her current mother was working in the police station and adopted her by her mother.
What a story!
Yeah.
Do you generally find that because you seek to tell stories with your paintings, that you often do find these stories?
It's the stories come out because I paint real people, so they all have a story behind them. And as they come and sit for me in the studio, like people's lives are fantastic. So it's rather than just taking a photograph of somebody or getting somebody out of a magazine, I have real people come and tell me their stories.
And how much do those people influence the way you paint, the way you depict them within your work?
There is something going on. There is, like, you know, like people say, energy, all that sort of stuff. But they come and sit for me, you know, at least 3 or 4 times into the studio, and that would be like, you know, it might be one time each week, so the painting shifts and changes, and I have time to assess it and figure out where the painting is going, where the story is going. And getting to know them also influences where the painting eventually finishes up.
What are some of the other images or the other characters that are contained within the Untold series?
Well, there's a clear series of, like, coastal images with water and that it's just the Australian landscape where I was based up until a few months ago, and that's outside of Adelaide, South Australia. But there's this lovely coast called the Fluorio, and it's where a lot of wines are produced that I noticed are quite popular in Malaysia. And anyway, we were living there, my wife and I, Robin, and I used to just hop in the car and just go out to, you know, I have to find something to start a painting off. So I'd just drive until something inspired me, and I took my easel and my small canvas, and I'd do the small studies on the spot. And then I'd have to think of, you know, how would this translate to a big painting? Some things don't, some things do. And then I think, well, what would be the scene? Sometimes there will be a character in the painting or whatever, just to make the big painting have, you know, some more elements to make it more interesting.
Well, we need to go for a break now. When we come back, we'll talk to Stuart McFarlane a little bit more about his journey thus far as an artist and how his current series fits in with the works that he's done before. I'm speaking to Australian painter Stuart McFarlane, whose show The Untold is currently on at Wailing Contemporary until the 16th of October. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to Australian painter Stuart McFarlane, whose show The Untold is currently showing at Wailing Contemporary until the 16th of October. So, Stuart, before we went on break, you were talking a little bit about how this particular show crosses those borders that you yourself have crossed between America and Australia, and also some of your other travels.
That's correct.
Did you start off wanting to do that with the series, or was that something that just happened?
No, I'm not able really to plan a series and work towards it. I don't actually go into the future and say I'm just going to have this series of paintings, because usually life influences the painting. So, and a show will take about a year to bring together. Mm-hmm. So, over the past year, you know, I've moved quite a bit, and it's not uncommon that I move a lot. So I don't really know what the next move will how it will influence the paintings.
And at what point did you realize that this was what it was shaping up to be?
The last few paintings were done in New Mexico, and they actually, I was quite inspired. They came out, you know, without much trouble. Sometimes the paintings are difficult, but I think I was quite inspired. And it was probably like a month before the show had to be finalized that I realized that what the show would be.
Mm. You said earlier, of course, that you started painting proper when you were about 13.
Yes.
And you've been a full-time artist for nearly 3 decades now?
It was always my intention to be a full-time artist, and I made that decision in my teens, although it took me until I was about, you know, like early 30s until I really, I think when I was in my early 30s, I just said, look, either I'll die or I'll just keep painting, but I probably won't die, so, so I'll just keep painting.
And so you kept painting.
Yeah.
And so in that case, how do you see this series fit into your journey as an artist thus far?
Basically, I tend to look back on a series of paintings or an exhibition. I'll look back 5 or 6 years afterwards and see and understand how it fits in. It's at the time of the exhibition, it's very, you know, I don't have that distance, you know, to actually make sense of it.
And is painting itself, is it a fairly solitary process for you, or does it involve communication with others or talking to others, working with others in order to work on that painting?
Well, see, I love the solitariness of painting. And it's not like solitary lonely or anything like that. It's like you get into your own zone, and it's a very, you know, nurturing and you know, meditative zone, and it's very good. It takes sometimes, you know, from the beginning, when you start working in the studio, when I start working, it takes me half an hour to an hour to really feel like I've let go and I'm totally focused. Before that, I resist. You know, there's always little jobs I think I have to do, and so I love that process. But I do bring in people and models, you know, to model for me, and that is good as well. It gives me more discipline. I have to be ready, set the studio up like you've had to set your studio up. You know, you have your guest in the studio. Mm-hmm. So that all helps. And often my wife Robin will pop in, and she will share the experience or take some photos or have a chat. There's nothing lonely or solitary about it. It's very easy.
And do you have other artists or other creatives that inspire you? I mean, looking at your work, people like Edward Hopper, for instance, is a clear, I mean, a lot of people will see that the figurative style and even some of the color use seem like that's some of the inspiration that you draw on, but I'm not sure whether that's something I'm reading into the work.
Yeah, well, starting so long ago, I mean, young artists should, you know, look at other artists to guide them, I think. And you know, I've taught as well. So, and in a teaching situation, you'll find students who go, I'm not looking at anybody. I'm totally individual. I've heard that so many times, which is completely crazy because, you know, you have to learn as a young person from, you know, people who actually have done it. Mm-hmm. My policy was to look at, you know, maybe a 6 or 7 painters who I really liked, and I tried to infuse them into me so that not one would come out as a, you know, so I wouldn't copy one person and it wouldn't be so obvious. So I don't, if you look at my work, you can see touches of Hopper in there, but it's not really that much like Hopper because I had so many, not so many, but several other influences. And initially in Australia, my first influence was Van Gogh. You know, like as a boy, you always see Van Gogh prints on people's walls. And so he influenced me a lot. And Toulouse-Lautrec and then Australian painters, Arthur Boyd and Sidney Nolan. There was a series of figurative Australian painters who influenced me quite a bit. Then as I started looking to America, because the English painters weren't, their colour wasn't, I love colour. So the European and English painters were a little, the colours are a little bit
muted,
sort of
muted,
and subtle. Although Lucian Freud, was very, very impactive on me. But the American painters had a sharper edge. They were a bit more cinematic. And so there were a lot of New York and Californian painters who I started looking towards and really enjoying. First of all, Edward Hopper was a huge influence and always will be. You know, he's just like the master. And then there were a series of people who basically walked in his footsteps, like Alex Katz, although, people say he's a little bit poppy, but he's a huge influence. And when I moved to New York when I was 21, I just wanted to get to New York. I just didn't want to pussyfoot around. So I got myself there when I was 21. And the way I got myself there was to get into art school. Mm-hmm. And, because I had to get a visa and I got a grant to support the art school. And that settled me. If I just went there without those things, just landed in New York, I probably would have lasted 6 months. But because I had an art school, that gave me a focal point and something to study and to work towards. And it kept me there. I stayed there for 8 years. Yeah.
It's interesting that you talked about color, actually, because one of the first things that struck me when I looked at your paintings was the use of color. And there's something about the way that you use color that reminds me of Australia. There's a certain warmth and a certain dryness in some ways and certain tones that are very distinctly Australian. Where do you think that comes from?
I just love color. And I want to go to buy new paint from the paint shop, looking at the different beautiful range of colors is like looking at a candy store for me, and if a Winsor & Newton put out some new color, I get very drawn to it. And some of their paint's extremely expensive. A little tube of paint might cost $60 and stuff. Mm. But I look at the richness and the body of that color, and I just think, oh, that'd be delicious.
And what is the role of color in the stories that you tell?
I'm constantly trying to make the color zing. I want it to have an impact, and sometimes I'll just like try and pare it down just to one or two colors that work together. But it's not that conscious, and I don't have a scientific palette or anything like that. A lot of it is just purely instinctive.
And I think as a viewer, one of the things that I particularly enjoyed about the way you use color is the way it there's a certain eroticism with some of the paintings that you do. There are nudes in some of them, but more significantly, I think there's a certain expression in some of the characters. There's a certain posture, and the color, the positioning, the figures, they all work together to create the sense. Again, is that something that you consciously decide to do? Is that driven by the people that you work with? How does that come about?
It's always a challenge to, when I'm working with a live model in the studio, there's only a certain number of ways that people can sit or lie, and you can't have them balancing on a finger or something like that because
not for 2 hours anyway.
No. So I mean, if you're just taking a few quick photographs, you can do almost anything. They can jump up in the air and stuff. But I actually draw from life, and it takes quite a long time, and then I paint from life. So I've had to do things like if they're lying on a bed sort of model stand, I'll prop it up so it's just at a wild angle, and then they have to somehow balance and fall off it, and just to give the whole painting a whole different feeling and perspective. Mm. So you have to do things, they're still static, but the painting's got a lot more momentum, and then I have to get a background color or scene or something like that to really set things off. It's all about getting as much aliveness and intensity as I can.
What does really telling contemporary stories mean when it comes to putting it on a painting? What exactly do you try and capture?
I try and paint paintings that reflect the actual time that I'm in, knowing that that time is going to look old in 10 or 15 years, but I'm happy about that because Like if you look at, say, a Hopper painting and there's a certain vehicle in that painting, you know that that painting was contemporary at the time and was the height of contemporaneous. But it's fantastic to look back at it in an almost historical way. On the other hand, there are some artists who you can't tell when the painting was painted. They might be painting in sort of a classical sort of style where you don't know if it's painted 50 years ago or 100 years ago or today. I like to throw hints in when the painting was done.
And do the things that are happening around that time, whether it's contemporary events or world events or political things, do they either overtly or subtly influence the painting that you do?
It's only on a very few occasions have I let things like that slip into the paintings. Mm-hmm. And they're very subtle and people almost never mention them. And I do slip little hints in occasionally. Yeah. I mean, there are many painters who are just overtly political all the time. And, the message is quite obvious. But I've basically, people have never talked about any little things that I've slipped into the paintings. I've never had anyone write it or talk about it.
And when you talk about capturing the contemporary, are you trying to capture a particular place, a particular society?
It's basically just an observation from a distance. So I'm not really trying to capture, nail down anything apart from just, like what I'm seeing. And in some ways, I often get the desire to write about it too, just to write about things. But there's not that much time. A person should really focus on what their main gifts are.
And what would an audience that is from outside of those places that you typically tend to paint about, say a Malaysian audience, what would their connection be to your works?
Well, I find the Malaysian audience to be very sophisticated and the people I meet have been all over the world and they seem to understand things better than, say, like if I met someone from a country area of the United States or Australia, they have very clear, quick understanding of what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And this is your fifth show in Malaysia.
Yeah. I've had some really wonderful reactions in KL. And I really enjoy the audiences here and the response. And I find that they often have taken the trouble to understand the work a lot. And I've had enthusiastic reaction and discussions about the work.
What keeps you maintaining this connection with KL, actually?
Well, the connection started with Wei Ling, who runs
Wei Ling Contemporary.
And she, of course, has the Brickfields Gallery, which is where I've mostly shown. And it's where I first had my show in 2006. I think Wei Ling started that in 2005. But I've known Wei Ling since she was about 18 years old. And because she studied in Australia. She studied where I was actually – I had a part-time – well, a short-term teaching a job, and I noticed she stood out. She's she's very stylish, and so I asked if I could paint her, and she appeared in one of my paintings.
Right. Okay.
Yes, and she remembered that. We didn't write to each other or see each other for many years, and but when she established her gallery, she found me through my website and very kindly offered to let me show at her gallery. So that was incredible.
Oh, well, that's a nice story.
Yeah.
How would you describe The Untold to someone who hasn't seen the paintings?
Look, I find like my paintings appeal to a wide audience. Like children love my paintings because they're like huge storybooks, blown up. And then I like people who sort of like adventure. I find a lot of, men who are like middle-aged, it reminds them of like, sort of like the adventure albums and all the 50s pulp novels and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It touches people in different ways. Women like my paintings because of the color and the paint surface. And so I just describe it as if you like a visual feast and you like stories and you like pulp fiction and all that sort of stuff, that would be a good reason to come and have a look.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Stuart.
Look, thanks, Shamala. You're fantastic, and you got me talking, and that's something in itself.
Well, there's plenty to talk about with your paintings. I'm very much looking forward to seeing them in the gallery.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Stuart McFarlane, an Australian artist who focuses on contemporary narrative paintings. His solo show, The Untold, is currently on at Wailing Contemporary until the 16th of October. For more information, visit wailing-gallery.com. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.